Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. We've had a short delay in getting podcasts out to you for a week or so, apologies for that. But tonight we're going back into looking at the decline in French fortunes in Vietnam. Now, the last time we talked about this, we spoke about the visionary French general, General Jean de Lattre de Tassigny, known as de Lattre. And he was brought in after huge French reverses at Cao Bang on the Vietnamese-Chinese border. These were the product of Chinese aid and assistance and the organisation of a battlefield army for the North Vietnamese, armed with Chinese and Russian surplus artillery and other equipment. Huge surprise for France, and de Lattre was drafted in and did a reasonably good job of turning things around. He prevented Hanoi from falling to the DRV. De Lattre, as we previously mentioned, had been one of the key figures in the French army in the last year of the Second World War. He had been able to restore some kind of glory to France by very quickly organising the French army into being an effective fighting force in the last 12 months from the liberation of Paris to really the fall of Berlin. He, along with the French Foreign Minister, Robert Schuman, who is more famously known as one of the architects of of European integration, were the key figures who were able to reach out to the United States of America for military aid in the early 1950s. And again, we are reading from Martin Thomas's brilliant book, Fight or Flight. Martin Thomas writes, de Lattre's achievements roused the foreign minister, Robert Schuman, from his gloom, persuading him to take the war to the DRV regime. This was a Damascene conversion, justifiably venerated as an architect of the European integration. It was Schuman's misfortune during successive spells as French premier and minister from 1947 onwards to be in the thick of the war from its inception. His room to challenge French actions was further limited by his party's identification with the war's prosecution. De Lattre promised salvation at last. The result was a dual-track fight strategy. Schumann capitalized on his reputation in Washington as a European visionary to persuade Dean Acheson's State Department that France could turn the political tide in Vietnam. General de Lattre exploited his formidable reputation with the US Joint Chiefs and other Pentagon insiders to secure larger, speedier deliveries of military aid. Fated in the American press as an inspirational leader, de Lattre drew on his reputational credit during hard bargaining with American officials over additional weaponry. Together, the elderly politician from Lorraine and the ailing general from the Vendée, that's it being de Lattre, convinced the Americans to up the ante in Indochina. It was a staggering turnabout, coming less than 3 months after Schumann's predecessor Edgar Faure, confessed to Dean Acheson that France could never meet its NATO commitments in Europe and fight the Hanoi regime at the same time. Now, the reason why this little kind of personal story, the story of Schumann and de Lattre and the Americans, is an interesting one, is because of the profound antipathy that the Americans had towards French imperial designs in Indochina. During the Second World War, Roosevelt had made it abundantly clear that he didn't trust the French, and he certainly didn't trust de Gaulle, and he had no interest in helping the French retain their position as an imperial power. He had not particularly a great deal of interest in helping the British retain their position as an imperial power, but his personal relationship with Churchill was certainly a lot more cordial than the relationship that either Churchill or Roosevelt had with Charles de Gaulle. So within the space of 5 years, to be able to inspire faith from the American Joint Chiefs of Staff that Vietnam was winnable, and also that Vietnam was important and that Vietnam was a key part of the Cold War struggle. This was a significant achievement, and it also gives us an indication as to how America chose to make its commitments to Vietnam. Of course, it's not all down to the war reputation of de Lattre or the political reputation of Schumann, but those things are not insignificant. So the inspiration that de Lattre brought to the Americans did have a significant impact. The American military involvement in Vietnam begins with aid to the French. There were moments where American air power was potentially ready to be involved during the Battle of Dien Bien Phu, and there was even discussion as to whether to deploy a nuclear weapon to help the French. I'm not sure exactly how serious that thinking was, if this was kind of akin to MacArthur's plans to use nuclear weapons on China at the height of the Korean War. De Lattre met with personal tragedy during the war in Indochina. In May 1951, his son Bernard was killed during a battle, the Battle of Nam Dinh in northern Vietnam. De Lattre was already suffering from cancer, and this terrible loss accelerated his illness, and he passed away in January 1952, and when he was buried, he was made posthumously a field marshal, and his comrades Bernard Montgomery and Dwight Eisenhower were pallbearers at his funeral. So the significance of de Lattre's death was a psychological one, and it was a morale one, in that many people within the French political class and the French military and security circles believed that he had been the only person that could possibly have won the war. And he was succeeded by General Raoul Salam. Martin Thomas writes, Dollinger's successors could hardly have been more different, either from their predecessor or from each other. General Raoul Salam could boast extensive experience of the Indochina Peninsula, more experience than virtually anyone in the French High Command. But boasting was never part of Salan's armoury. Years spent working for the French Military Intelligence Service in Laos and Vietnam fostered the quiet inscrutability for which Salan was renowned. Sometimes compared to a Chinese mandarin, and known for his fondness for opium, Salan felt more at home in Saigon than the city of Nîmes, where in the Midi, from which he came. Henri Navarre, a relative newcomer to the Far East, shared Salan's background in colonial intelligence gathering, but in the Arab territories, not the Far Eastern ones. A suave Parisian with impeccable sans-serre credentials, his reputation was enhanced by serving in the reconstructed French army that helped liberate his hometown in 1944. Neither commander had enough men or equipment to turn the Indochina campaign their way. Salan came closest. In mid-October 1952, DRV forces drove the French units strung across the Tonkin, retreating towards the Black Low. Almost 1,000 members of the expeditionary force were lost. Salan improvised a quick response, consolidating all his available forces to mount Operation Lorraine, the biggest French counteroffensive of the war's final years. Meant to split the DRV forces, to rupture their communications and bolster the French defensive position in northwest of Hanoi, Lorraine was still too small a venture to turn the tide of war. By the time that Navarre replaced Salan in May 1953, the expeditionary force was chronically short of experienced officers and NCOs, so much so that it was impossible to sustain the rhythm of offensive operations. Navarre's task, as a result, was retrenchment, not victory, holding the line in the hope that the politicians might extract French irons from the Vietnamese fire. Now, reading between the lines there, following the death of de Lattre, you have these two very able generals, Salan and Navarre, neither of whom are given the resources they need to adequately prosecute the war and defeat the North Vietnamese. This is no doubt the result of a gradual realisation that the war is unpopular, that the war is unsustainable, and that the war is unwinnable, and that the war is something that that France's political classes hope will go away. And even the supply of American military equipment doesn't quite fill the gaps that that the French need. It doesn't answer the scope of the war. The equipment itself didn't quite come in the quantities that one might have expected. The French actually saw some of the older equipment that the Americans supplied and supplied in kind of fits and starts was being a kind of an insult, and the idea that the French were waiting for like kind of scraps from America's table, from handouts, and they were really getting the cast-offs. So in many ways, some of the ways in which the Americans were defeated in Vietnam were first pioneered in the First Indochina War. The breaking of political morale in Washington happens in a very similar way. The British were keen observers of what was happening in French Indochina. And they were keen because they wanted to ensure that their own problems in Malaya, under the communist anti-communist emergency that lasted throughout the 1950s, wouldn't be added to by problems across the border in Indochina. One observer, H.A. Graves, who was the British consul in Saigon, summarised the position as thus. When the Viet Minh launched their autumn offensive in October 1952, they rapidly dispelled any immediate hope of a French military initiative. The fault is not only on the side of the French High Command in Indochina. Inhibited in their military freedom of action by political caveats from Paris, dictated to plan for the withdrawal of French forces when their crying present need is for reinforcements, they have been reduced to waiting to be hit. When they are hit, French opinion at home takes another plunge into despondency and pessimism, and so the vicious cycle continues. So...
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What this says is because the political classes in Paris did not believe in the possibility of a French victory, they then held up troops, held up reinforcements, saw it as throwing good money and blood after bad, and that depletes the forces in Vietnam and makes it more likely that there'll be further defeats and further humiliations and further hopelessness back home in France. The British view is kind of quite telling, really. The British had quite a keen interest in the events in Vietnam without themselves wishing to become involved. Of course, it had been British soldiers that had liberated Vietnam from the Japanese and had returned it to French colonist settler control. Winston Churchill said in 1952, "The French are naturally afraid of being Dutched out of Indochina by the same sloppy United Nations methods as lost Indonesia. On the other hand, they will not take the only step which could restore their position, namely 2 years military service and sending conscripts to the front. France cannot be a great nation, still less an overseas empire, without a good French army. A strong French chamber of deputies breeding prime ministers by the score and deputies having splendid fun in politics is no substitute for the hard, simple decisions which they have to make to remain a great power." Spoken like a true colonialist there. Now, it's important sometimes not to put too much store in Churchill's opinions. Churchill had huge numbers of opinions on all sorts of things, was frequently wrong, and would come up with suggestions like national service for every young French man to go and conquer Vietnam without really having to fully follow the idea through. So, you know, well... whilst his observations are telling and interesting, One needs to kind of view them in the context of Churchill himself. There's a famous anecdote by Sir Alan Brooke, Churchill's Chief of Imperial General's Staff, said that his job was really to stop Winston doing 20 things a day and find the one idea that might be halfway useful. So the British estimates of the situation in Vietnam was that the crisis was being caused in large part by political paralysis, and that when the French did choose to fight on, there was with a heavy pessimism, with a belief that perhaps something can be salvaged, but that in itself led to there being very little reward for French efforts. Whilst the expeditionary force teetered on the edge of disaster, the DRV, the Democratic Republic of Vietnam, soon to become North Vietnam, was its armed forces were increasing in strength and capacity. As the famous capture in October 1952 of Nha Lo had confirmed, during the campaigning winter of 52 to 53, the DRV could field over 7 divisions capable of set-piece battle encounters. These were not guerrillas in guerrilla fighters in civilian attire, as there's a kind of popular confusion based on people's knowledge from Vietnam War films. The DRV were a battlefield army with artillery, infantry, and later armour. And this makes the reconquest of Vietnam and Indochina a much more difficult prospect, because this is a colonial war against a fully equipped and trained and motorised fighting force. The forces that the DRV had controlled most of North and Central Vietnam, and they exerted an economic stranglehold over other parts of Indochina as well. So they could control Laos. They had commercial networks which extended by land and sea from China to Thailand, selling black market drugs, narcotics, artillery, captured French equipment and American equipment. French special force units were reduced to using secret service funds to buy up locally produced opium in the hope that this might win the loyalty of Laotian farmers and Vietnamese traffickers who traded in the Golden Triangle between Laos, Vietnam and Thailand. And there are, again, there's some interesting parallels there. The CIA later become heavily involved in the murky business of the narcotics trade in the Golden Triangle too. But this showed you how the DRV was starting to become quite well funded, and there's a kind of elements of not that it was you could be remotely described as a narco state, but there are elements of that overlap between the narcotics trade and the process of state building itself. Reporting on a tour of Indochina in May 1953, the Chief of the Air Staff, General Charles Lascheres, made no effort to conceal his pessimism. DRV forces made war totally by coordinating all aspects of their political and military initiatives. Their presence was deeply felt throughout the Federation. This is the Federation of Indochina. Even in the zones that we outwardly control. It seemed unlikely that creeping DRV influence could be countered. De Lattre's earlier efforts to develop a self-reliant Vietnamese army had not been crowned with success.
the French military evaluations of the local forces there, Vietnamese forces, were pretty bleak. They saw them as being short on commanders and having very poor levels of training. But most serious of all, Vietnamese army battalions were not capable of acting alone at all. And this left the regime of Emperor Bao Dai hugely exposed. The Vietnamese army needed to have the French to support it, and that in itself made any possible French-backed puppet state in Vietnam hardly what you would call viable. The prerequisite for American aid to not just the French but also to the Vietnamese army was the Vietnamization of the war, a term again that is coined later under Richard Nixon, then late Johnson, early Nixon, and this meant turning over to the Vietnamese the responsibility for fighting the war. The reason why the Americans were keen on doing this is because they did not want the American public back home or world opinion to see America helping to prosecute a colonial war, a war of recolonization. The more you can give it the impression that this is helping the freedom-loving peoples of Vietnam escape the clutches of the evil communists, it's a far more attractive narrative. And in general, that is the narrative, that is the objective that the Americans believe that they were trying to achieve. There was very little interest, as I've mentioned previously, it's very little interest on the part of the Americans in helping the French to recolonize Vietnam. No interest in that whatsoever, really. It's just an unfortunate byproduct of defeating communism. How had the National Army of Vietnam become so weak? Well, this is in part the fault of the French, who were unwilling to cede proper control and autonomy to the army, the National Army of Vietnam. They were wary of the possibility of another fighting force emerging fully capable of ejecting the remaining French from Indochina if there was a successful defeat of the forces of the DRV. So that lack of faith, that lack of trust, again, caused the French additional problems. René Meyer, the French premier, made a decision in May 1953 to devalue the Vietnamese currency, the piastre, the Vietnamese currency, which brought matters to a head. It brought matters to a head politically and militarily. The French, who had been pulling the strings of the associated states within the Federation of Indochina, Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam, and had been manipulating and controlling them, it precipitated its own crisis by devaluing the piastre, which was the currency for all the states in the Federation. They diminished the treasury holdings and the purchasing power of all these three governments. Ironically, the devaluation was meant to help the economies of, or help the investment in the three countries. It was designed to make it easier and cheaper to spend on social welfare. But the outcome is that treasury holdings actually diminish. This was a plan that was dreamt up between Meyer and Eisenhower.
in the assumption that if you increase welfare spending, then you're going to present an offer to all the states in the Federation to remain close to France and to reject whatever social welfare measures might be on the table from communism. The net result, though, in 1953, is it leads Prince Sihanouk, the monarch of Cambodia, to demand and to get full independence from the Federation. And that's the story for next time. So anyway, thanks very much for listening, and I hope you find this interesting and useful, and we'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. All the best. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.